compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. And I would like to make a special welcome, say a special welcome rather, to our seven new stations in our network of English-based programming. Just joining us this week, these are listeners in Florida, Indiana, Missouri, and McAllen and Harlingen, Texas. We welcome you. We're happy to have you with us, and we hope you enjoy spending time with us each day. I know we enjoy spending time with you, and especially for all of you who are new to the programs here at Relevant Radio. Here's the number to dial to call up and be on the air, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I was in L.A., as you know, this past weekend. Well, I flew into LAX, and then I spoke in Yorba Linda at the Nixon, President Nixon's Presidential Library, and that was really a neat experience to see a little bit of history there. President Nixon and his wife, Pat, are buried there, and the house that he was born in and lived in until he was about 10 years of age is there, right on the grounds. So I was impressed, and I had the opportunity to speak to, and I forget the exact count, but it seems like it was in the 125 range of members of Legatus, which is a Catholic organization that helps to build spirituality and Catholic identity among business people. And I had a couple interesting experiences while I was on this trip, and it was a whirlwind trip. So I just left after the show on Friday, and I came back yesterday. Two things stick out in my mind, Cyrus. You ready for these?
Let's do it.
All right. So the first one was what happened yesterday morning. I had a 6 a.m. flight out of Los Angeles, so LAX, and okay, you know, I'm the one who arranged it, so it's only my fault for having to get up early. But like at 3 in the morning or something like that, 3:50 in the morning, all the electricity went out. And the only reason I knew it was because the fan turned off, the air conditioning fan turned off. And that'll wake you up if you have this, you know, the sound going, all of a sudden it stops. So I got up and the alarm clock's dead. The lights are off. Nothing will turn on. I look outside and from where I can see, it looks like the hotel is all dark. And indeed, it had a power failure. So I'm in total darkness now. Thankfully, the water was running, so I was able to clean up and get ready for the day. But I carry with me a flashlight whenever I travel. So that was nice. Like the first time I ever really had to use it, it's there. And so I was able to get dressed and pack my stuff and get ready to go in pitch darkness otherwise. I get out in the hallway. They have the emergency lights on. I go to the elevators, nothing. Press the buttons, nothing. The elevator. And I'm on the 7th floor. This is a big hotel right near LAX. Well, it's about a mile and some away from LAX, as I found out in a minute. So can you picture this, Cyrus? I'm lugging my suitcases down 7 flights of stairs. I get down to the bottom level. This is not the, you know, the easy morning I was expecting. And I'm faced with the exit doors that have the big warning labels that say alarm, you know, do not go through this door. An alarm's going to go off. It's a delayed door. And I thought, well, I don't care. I've got to get out of here.
And you're already upset after going down 7 flights of stairs.
Yeah, you know, I'm starting to get a little sweaty, and I don't like that either. So I thought, I don't care. I'm busting out of this place. You know, it's not my fault that I've got to go through this door. And nothing happens. There's no sound. There's no alarm. I guess it's tied into the electrical system. So off I go. And I'm standing now on a big, busy boulevard. Although there were not that many cars out at that. I mean, it was 4 in the morning. And it's dark. And first thing I notice is that there are people kind of scurrying down the streets, and I'm thinking, why are these people up so early? And it dawned on me, these are people who are going to work. They're going to work like at LAX. And so I was kind of disoriented. I didn't know which way to go. And it's dark, and you know, I'm not familiar with that street. So this young woman goes walking by, and she's moving at a pretty fast clip. And I, poor thing, I feel like I must have frightened her. I sort of stepped out of the shadows where I was standing. And I said, excuse me, can you tell me where is LAX? And she didn't even slow down. She just said, that's where I'm going. But she kept walking really fast. Like, who is this guy? So I figured, okay, well, I better follow her. So I walked to LAX.
Not too closely, I hope.
No. But she could have outrun me anyway. But no, yes, she kept going quickly. And I realized that I was among a bunch of other people who are maybe living in the area, and they get up real early and they go to work at LAX. So I hoofed it a mile, mile and a half, whatever it was, to my terminal at LAX. And so I got my workout, I got my steps in, and it still didn't make me feel that good, but you know, I was still kind of irritated by the whole thing.
Why didn't you order an Uber or a taxi?
I did. Here's the thing. I did order an Uber, and it said it was like 10 or 15 minutes away, and I felt uncomfortable standing there because this is, you know, these are the mean streets, and that's not a good area. And I was by myself, you know, some gringo with a couple of suitcases, and I just didn't feel like I wanted to stay there. So I called for Uber, and then I canceled it because I thought, well, I'm just going to walk it. And I also felt comfortable because there were other folk coming in the same direction. They were walking briskly, so I felt safe. I didn't feel weird or anything. So that was how my day started. But the weekend started, interestingly. I'm on the plane getting seated, and I have a window seat. And I'm just getting settled in, and the woman behind me starts, "Oh, excuse me, sir, do you mind if I sit there, or can I switch seats with you?" And it's like, you know, and her husband was sitting in the aisle seat. She wants to switch with the window so she can sit with her husband. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to switch with her. And there was a guy, and kind of an older guy, kind of sitting behind her husband in the aisle seat. He says, "Well, I'll switch. I don't mind. I can switch with you." So long story short, I wound up switching so she could sit with her husband, because that's the right thing to do. And other people have done that for Nancy and me.
Yeah.
So long story short, I won't belabor this story, but it was the plane ride to LAX, and it was from Charlotte, so it was a long distance flight. So anyway, the guy sitting next to me, he's a very jovial fellow, very conversational, and we were having this interesting conversation about many different topics. But the punchline to this whole thing is, and he might even be listening right now, his name is Chris. Hey, Chris. He says, "Well, I'm, you know," when he found out what I did, he said, "Well, what do you do?" And I said, "I'm a radio host." And we talked about Relevant Radio, and we talked about the programming, and talked about this program, and how I don't have guests, and I don't do interviews, and it's commentary and phone calls. And, you know, he was intrigued, and now that sounds interesting, I'll check it out. So we talked about all kinds of things. And then he said, "Can you write down the information for me? Because I'd like to check it out." And I said, "Sure, but I don't have a pen with me." And he says, "I don't have a pen." Oh, he says, "I have a pen, but I don't have anything to write on." So what does he do? He pulls out the vomit bag out of the seat pocket in front. So this is the first for me. So I wrote down all my information on a vomit bag and handed it back to him. And I don't think that symbolizes anything, but I just thought it was kind of funny that my business card was a vomit bag that morning.
How funny. I just saw your signature being sold on eBay
on a vomit bag.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, $15.
How was it getting that much? I actually joked with him about that. I said, maybe I'll see this on eBay next week. But no, he was a real good guy, very interested. And what I thought was neat about this conversation, Cyrus, was that Chris was telling me that he had been away from the faith for a long time, and he had fairly recently come back. And he was describing a little bit about his own journey and his own resuming of his Catholic faith and getting back into prayer and going to Mass and things. And it was really neat for me, because it doesn't matter how old you are or where you've been or what you've done, you can always come home. And that made me happy in talking to Chris, that he had made his way back to church. And who knows, maybe he's listening to the program even now. And if you are, Chris, it was nice meeting you. And hang on to that vomit bag. It might be worth something on eBay at some point. I've never had a vomit bag calling card before. That's a first for me, Cyrus.
That's fun. This is just a good example of how we're all on a different part of the path.
Isn't that the truth?
So it's good to have a little compassion and help people when you can, and accept help when it's given to you.
By the way, Cyrus, it just occurred to me, because you know that we talk about tacos with some frequency on the program, and people know I love tacos, and people, they send me taco-related things all the time. Taco socks, taco towels, taco refrigerator magnets, taco t-shirts, taco ball caps, you name it, our wonderful and very loyal listeners tend to send that. I wonder now if maybe because of this story, people are going to start sending me vomit bags, you know, and just, you know, thinking of you, Patrick. I'm not asking for it. I'm just saying I'm thinking out loud. So no, please don't go to that trouble, everybody. Don't go to that trouble. Hang on to the vomit bag for your own use if ever you should need it. 888, and hopefully never during the show, 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Eric in Naples, Florida. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First-time caller, and I just have a question. It's more of a clarification point, I believe, on the powers of the devil.
Okay.
I know you said in previous programs that the devil doesn't have the powers of God, can't read your mind, can only whisper into your ear. And I didn't know that before, and it gave me actually a lot of comfort for some reason, knowing this.
That's good.
But then I thought to myself, whispering in your ear, and then you mentioned your story earlier today about potentially making sounds in that church. And who knows if it was him or not. But I guess my point is clarification, because it seems like if I could whisper into somebody's ear, that's quite the power. If I could make sounds somewhere, that's quite the power. And I'm just looking for some clarification.
Sure.
I'm a little confused on what is the extent of those powers, and how are they differentiated from God's powers?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. Well, there's no question but that the angels, as a life form, they have tremendous power, powers beyond anything we can imagine. I mean, they're obviously not God, so their powers are infinitely less than God's, but their powers are much greater than our own. They're higher than we are in the created order. Hebrews chapter 1 talks about that. So they do have powers. Now, in the fall of the angels, the bad angels who fell from being good angels, their powers were greatly diminished. Their intellects were darkened in a way similar to what happened to Adam and Eve, and how they lost so many of their powers and abilities. The same is true in the case of the angels. So even though the fallen angels are fallen, and even though they're stunted and their intellects have been darkened, they're still more intelligent than we are and more powerful. So being pure spirits, they also have certain capabilities that we don't have because we are body and soul composites. So they don't need to sleep, for example. They don't take time off. They don't clock out at the end of the day. There's no maternity leave, obviously. There's no vacation time. They also don't have anything to do, because God's ministering servants, the good angels, they are appointed to do many things, very, very few of which we even know about, but we know that they are appointed by God to do certain things. Well, the devils don't have any of those things because they've been cast out. So they have nothing to do except to watch us and to look for opportunities to tempt us. So this gets to your question about whispering in your ear. They do have that capability. It is a power. They try to exercise that power to tempt, to frighten if possible, to deter, and they'll use different things to do that. Sometimes it's more overt, like the scratching that I saw or that I heard, if in fact that's what it was, and it might not have been. But if it was, that would be a kind of overt way to do it. But usually it's more subtle, and it involves the fallen angels observing our imaginations. They can't read our secret thoughts, but they can see, according to St. Thomas and others, they can see those mental pictures that you have in your imagination, or the video that you have in your imagination. They can pick up on some of those things, and because they're shrewd and they're very intelligent, they can put two and two together, and not only by seeing what some of these mental images are that you might be thinking about, but also recognizing maybe even in your physiology, the way we as humans have scientific instruments that can detect like heat in certain parts of the body, or the brain lights up in certain sectors of the brain when certain stimuli take place. So even we, with our instruments and such, we can observe things like that. Well, it seems that the angels, they have the capacity to just see it without, I mean, they don't need any instruments. They can just see it. They can tell. So they make decisions based on what they think might be an effective way to tempt you. And then when they're successful, oh, okay, well, I see what his weakness is. And then they continue to perfect that. C.S. Lewis had a wonderful book on this called The Screwtape Letters, in which you've got an older, I mean, this is fanciful because devils aren't older than other, angels aren't older than each other. They all seem to have been created at the same time. But in any case, for the sake of poetic license, he has an older, more experienced demon writing letters to his protege demon, and he's instructing him on how to snare the human being that he's been put in charge of trying to drag down to hell. So that's a very interesting reflection on this, Eric. I'll leave it at that only because I don't want to go on too long, but those are some thoughts in response to your question. What do you think?
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned the Screwtape Letters. I just listened to them on my move to Naples about 3 weeks ago. So,
did you hear the John Cleese version?
Yeah, it's amazing. No, I think it's the other version. People keep asking me that, and I have to go look at it to see what it is. But
okay, John Cleese from Monty Python, he did a, you know, he voiced the Screwtape Letters, and it is really good. I think a lot of it has to do with his accent, but I'm glad you're familiar with the Screwtape Letters.
If I have one more follow-up question, mm-hmm. Patrick. Mm-hmm. With regards to, it's sort of interesting what you said about the angels having these powers, but not the fallen angels. It just made me think.
No. Okay. I don't think I did say that. The angels have powers, and the fallen angels have all kinds of powers, but their powers are diminished. They're not as powerful as the good angels are, but the bad angels have all kinds of powers.
Okay. All right. But it sounds to me like our guardian angels have more powers, that are more capable of figuring things out, and have, I guess, sort of wondering why they, or maybe they are, but why they haven't necessarily tried to communicate with us a little more than, as opposed to the fallen angels that are trying to, you know, cause problems for us all the time.
I think the reason is because God has given the guardian angels care over us. Each of us has at least one guardian angel. And the guardian angels know from God what they should and can do, and they don't transgress that. So the fact that your guardian angel's not communicating in some overt way with you is because God told him not to. If your guardian angel were to communicate with you in some more overt way, the way, say St. Padre Pio received more overt contact from his guardian angel, that's because God permitted it. So we don't know, obviously, I certainly don't know why the guardian angels don't have a more direct role. In a way, I think it would be wonderful, but it would also be frightening, I should think. So maybe it's for that reason. But a good book, Eric, sounds like you're interested in angelology, which is good. It's called Angels and Devils by the late Joan Carol Cruz. Thanks for the call. Let's go now to Melissa, listening in Albuquerque. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning, Patrick. I've listened to your radio program every morning, and I'm born and raised Catholic, and probably for the last 2 years, I started to attend Christian services, which I really enjoy, but it's starting to cause a dilemma because I don't attend Catholic Mass. And I recently got my child, he did his first Holy Communion, and so I feel like I have to make a decision, and I just wanted to get your opinion.
Sure. Well, my opinion is that you should be Catholic, not because I want you to, or because, you know, strength in numbers or anything, but because the Catholic Church is the church that Jesus Christ established. Now, with all due respect to the good people in the Protestant church that you've been attending, I'm sure they're very sincere, and they have a lot of things that are true, and I don't wish to disparage them in any way whatsoever. But Jesus Christ did not start that church. Now, keep in mind, too, Jesus Christ did not start, as C.S. Lewis would call it, mere Christianity. In other words, he didn't start Christianity. He started a church. Upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So if you were to go back in time, Melissa, go back 500, 600 years, and you'll find the Catholic Church, you'll find the Pope and the lay people and the teachings and Holy Communion and all of those things, but you won't find Protestantism. You won't find groups like the group that you have been visiting with in the last few months. You won't find Lutherans or Baptists or non-denominationals or Calvinists or any of those groups because they didn't exist yet. And all their theological claims, like going by the Bible alone and justification by faith alone or once saved, always saved, you won't find any of those things because those religious ideas and religious movements had not yet begun. But you'll find the Catholic Church. And go back another, say, 400 years, so now you're in the year 1000, you'll find the Catholic Church. You'll find the Pope and the lay people and the sacraments and the Holy Eucharist. And if you were to go back century by century, Melissa, all the way back to the very first century when the apostles were still alive, you'll find the Catholic Church. You'll find the writings of the earliest Christians talking about the real presence of Jesus in the Holy Eucharist. You'll see the Pope, in this case, it was Pope Clement, the Bishop of Rome, writing a letter to the church in Corinth and instructing them what they needed to do. And they recognized his authority as Pope. He had an authority over them, and they recognized it. You'll see the word Catholic being used by the end of the first, beginning of the second century. St. Ignatius of Antioch, who was himself, by the way, he was a disciple of St. John the Apostle. He also, it seems, knew St. Peter. So he learned the faith from the apostles directly, and his writings contain the use of the word Catholic to describe the earliest Christians, the Catholic Church, he called it. And there are many other examples, but my point is that if you go back in time, all these other groups vanishes. The Mormons are gone, Jehovah's Witnesses are gone, all the various Protestant groups are gone. You go all the way back to the time of the apostles, and what do you find? The Catholic Church at every step. Now, the Catholic Church has plenty of problems. We have pre-scandals and all kinds of other issues, but it's like Noah's Ark. Noah's Ark was not a very nice place. I'm sure it stank to high heaven. And I'm sure it was not a comfortable place to be. But imagine, Melissa, if you were there with Noah and his family on the day the flood started, wouldn't you want to get on board that ark?
Definitely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And keep listening. Al, thank you for the call now. Keep listening, because when we return, even though you've hung up, I'm going to share with you some resources that I believe will be helpful to you. Please stay listening, Melissa. I'll be right back.
Did you know that there's lots of different ways to support the mission of Relevant Radio? Besides a cash gift or pledge, we can accept gifts of stock and gifts from IRAs. Today, it's easier than ever to do. If you'd like more information on all the ways you can support our mission, go to relevantradio.com and click on the support tab. Or call 877-291-0123. Your contribution by any method will help bring Christ to the world through the media on Relevant Radio. Thank you.
Hello?
I have just one question for you. Are you ready?
Am I ready for what? Who's this?
Are you ready for
the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio?
I'm ready. Are you ready, Cyrus?
I'm ready.
You are ready.
Ready,
you were
what?
Born ready. I hear you say that.
Yeah, I like that one.
All right.
Born ready.
That poor lady. Every time I hear this, I think that poor lady. Who's this? This is Drew Mariani getting everybody ready for the Patrick Madrid Show.
Never
on Relevant Radio. What's that, Cyrus?
Never heard of him.
Never heard of Drew Mariani?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know if you heard about this, but you should pay close attention. This is from the Standard, a UK newspaper. Train conductors warn not to use ladies and gentlemen after a complaint, as in singular, after a complaint from a non-binary passenger. That could be an actual garage band name, now that I think of it, the non-binary passengers.
I think single complaint would be a pretty good name, too.
Yeah. It's not as good as mine, though. London Northeastern Railway has said its conductors will be warned not to use the greeting, ladies and gentlemen, following a complaint from a non-binary passenger. LNER, that stands for London Northeastern Railway. LNER, said train managers should not use the phrase to avoid offending passengers who might identify as neither male nor female. It comes after a complaint from a passenger on social media, of all things, in a Twitter post directed to LNER. Talk about the tail wagging the dog. If you're in a certain group and you complain about any old thing on Twitter, the earth will move under your feet for you. And you can cause things to happen just by complaining on Twitter. Here's an example. So the non-binary person said on Twitter, "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls." That was in quote marks. "As a non-binary person, this announcement doesn't actually apply to me, so I won't listen." What? LNER replied to the complainant, agreeing that train managers should not be using language like this. Come on, guys. The spokesman added, "Please, could you let me know which service you are on, and I will ensure they remain as inclusive as we strive to be at LNER." In a later statement to the publication, LNER confirmed that the use of the phrase would be examined, adding, quote, "It was committed to diversity and inclusion in all that we do for our customers, colleagues, and communities." The announcement prompted a mixed response on social media, with some agreeing with the move and others happy for the conductors to keep the phrase. Jarley, an operator who was seated next to the complainant at the time of the announcement, tweeted, "I sat with Lawrence when this tweet was sent. Both of us are non-binary, and we were both alarmed and uncomfortable by the lack of inclusion." This comes from an operator that has made a big push on, and this is him tweeting, push on LGBTQ+ inclusivity, including prominent Trainbow campaigns. "Both Lawrence and I," he said, "were ourselves customers of the railway. Being rail staff does not absolve an operator of the duty of care and responsibility to be inclusive. Raising awareness of issues is educating." That's in emphasis there. "We shouldn't be having these conversations behind closed doors." Another person wrote on Twitter, "We're really proud of how well at LNER social media team have been dealing with the continued backlash against their support for inclusive language yesterday. It's awful that some people consider everyone is welcome to be a radical and offensive statement." I'm just going to step outside the article for a minute. I believe that everyone is welcome is a good thing. Why not the train conductor who says, "Ladies and gentlemen, is he not welcome?" I don't know. Another customer stated that they found the phrase rather lovely. "I travel regularly with you, and being greeted by a driver with a cheery, 'Good morning, ladies and gentlemen,' is not offensive. It's rather lovely," the customer wrote. So this is an example. This is a skirmish in the culture wars with regard to inclusive language. You know me, that my general rule of thumb is to simply not accept that narrative. I don't believe we should accept that narrative. I believe that we should continue to be rooted in reality, which includes the fact that there are indeed males and females. And everybody is one or the other. Even in times of anatomical, biological ambiguity or personal being convinced that you are something different, objectively speaking, there are men and women. And men can't be women and women can't be men. And to depart from that, in my view, is to depart from reality. Now, this does not rise to that level, but this, I guess, is... I don't know. It's kind of an analog in a way. I don't want to push that analogy too far because it's not a perfect analogy by any stretch. But Oxford University is set to teach this, according to Ewan Somerville in The Telegraph. Oxford University is set to teach students that imperial measurements, including the mile, the inch, the yard, the pound, and ounce, are, quote, tied deeply to the idea of empire. This is part of the decolonizing project. Oxford University reportedly plans to teach that imperial measurements are tied deeply to the idea of the empire in a bid to make science courses less Eurocentric, because that's evil. The university has suggested imperial measurements, including the mile, inch, pound, and ounce, should be decolonized due to their links to the British Empire. Decolonizing plans by Oxford's maths, physics, and life sciences departments suggest the teaching of the measurements in the curriculum may change. It comes after a pledge from Oxford's Vice Chancellor Louise Richardson to embed teaching on colonialism and the empire into courses and to diversify the maths and life science curriculums. I think it should be curricula, but whatever. Undergraduates and scholars will reportedly conduct research this summer to determine how Oxford's science teaching can be made less Eurocentric before drawing up proposals for lecturers to apply recommendations to the syllabus. Now, this is interesting, and as we go along in the article, Cyrus, it gets into some of the history of colonization and things like that. But correct me if I'm wrong, Cyrus, but isn't the metric system, you know, meters and kilometers? Some people say kilometers, some say kilometer. And everything that goes in the metric system, that was also started in Europe, I believe.
Mind blown.
You know what? In a way, this could work to our advantage, because I don't like to... I always have to translate into kilometers. So, you know, I'm used to miles and feet and inches and things like that. So whenever there's something that's given to me in meters or kilometers, I always have to do the mental math calculations to figure, oh, well, that means, you know, it's X number of kilometers. Oh, that's 12 miles. So I always convert it back into. Do you find yourself doing that?
No.
No, you don't even bother with it.
I don't bother.
Do you just stop reading when you hit something that says kilometers? You just stop?
And yeah, oh yeah. It's another language. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Sorry, what? Well, my thinking, Cyrus, I'll just leave it at this, and we can post this link for people who are interested. But my thinking is that if I'm correct, and I hope I am, but if the metric system is also Eurocentric because it was developed there, it would be even worse if it had been developed in the United States. But if it was, maybe we can get rid of that too. And that might be sufficient reason to decolonize some of these other things if we could get rid of the metric system. Could you imagine if we could get everybody on the same page?
That actually makes sense.
Mm. Of course, the rest of the world uses the metric system, and the United States is one of the few places that doesn't anymore. When I think we should convert, I think we should colonize the rest of the world to our way of doing it.
good luck.
That won't be popular on Twitter, will it?
No, I'm not. I don't think I'm going to stand with you on that one.
All right. Oh, so you're going to cut and run Oh, wait a minute. I got another one. I've got another story related. Then we're going to go to the phones. IKEA, the furniture giant IKEA, has shared that they'll be doing, the way this is written, it's using the inclusive language. The giant IKEA shared that they'll be doing their part to tackle heteronormativity by updating their parking signs. You see how urgent these problems we face are? And it's so important that they snap into action and address these urgent needs. So important. It's super important. The parking signs that show depictions of families, they want to make sure that they now show depictions of same-gender families, same-sex families, because sex and gender are the same thing. I know it goes against the popular culture, but it's true. So instead of always seeing a graphical depiction of a male and female character with a child, sometimes it will feature two female parents or two male parents, which I think should offend the non-binary people, shouldn't it, Cyrus? Shouldn't they be offended? Isn't IKEA being oppressive by doing that?
I don't think I'm allowed to be offended.
Well, you are if you're in a certain group.
But I'm not part of that club.
So you have no right to be offended.
Right. Yep.
Okay. The company also announced it will be introducing more gender-neutral bathrooms alongside its exiting male and female facilities, and staff will be able to include their pronouns on their name badges. IKEA will mark International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Interphobia, and Transphobia. And guess what, Cyrus? Just when you thought we were out of acronyms, that is IDAHBOT, okay? IDAHBOT. And that's the actual acronym that they're using for this. International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Interphobia, and Transphobia. Also known as IDAHBOT, IDAHBOT.
Hey, it rolls right off the tongue.
It does. There will be special rainbow-striped shopping bags. There will be flying Black Lives Matter versions of the Pride flag at their stores.
I bet there won't be police.
There better not be. There better be people with clipboards.
There's people that are scratching their head right now because they didn't hear the story earlier.
They'd have to hear the first hour of the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It'll be in the archives. Podcast will be up in 3 hours.
As to be expected, some people have not taken the announcement that the company is being inclusive of the LGBTIQ. I'm trying to, because I is what now? This acronym keeps getting longer. So I know what the L is. I know what the G is. I know what the B is. I know what the T is. The I is, what is the I for? Inter? Must be inter. Q plus communities. Let me reread that sentence. As to be expected, some people have not taken this announcement well, with claims breaking across social media and in the comment section of news articles saying the inclusive moves will lead to confusion and car park accidents. They say car park over there. Does this mean the parking spot can only be used by same-sex couples? Disgruntled people asked alongside, well, what if I have two children? And by the way, that's a serious breach of decorum, because if they only show one child, what about the exclusion that's taking place against all those families that have more than one child? They're being excluded. This is intolerable. Elsewhere, people who didn't know the difference between gender and sexuality wailed that they were being discriminated against for being heterosexual, while in other comment threads, single mothers complained that there had never been specific parking for one-parent families. This is outrageous, Cyrus. The injustices. In a 2018 British shopping center situation, they changed their parking signage as part of an advertising campaign. The move led to a 28-year-old man claiming it made parking stressful for him. The advertising company behind the campaign noted that the research had shown that 65% of British families do not fit into the traditional mold of husband, wife, and children. Britons being confused by non-traditional signs was nothing new. Back in 2016, some visitors to London were perplexed when some crosswalk signals near Trafalgar Square featured same-sex couples. A visiting Lancashire man told the Sunday Express he was perplexed when he tried to cross the road and an image of two women appeared. When the light went green, I saw two female symbols and I thought, oh, right, so my missus can cross with my little girl, but what do me and the boy do? Do you think that was tongue-in-cheek, Cyrus?
From that particular source, yes. Yes, I do.
Have you ever been confused by crosswalk signs?
No. And I don't feel like a white crosswalk guy represents me. And only, that was a story that you did 2 or 3 years ago where they wanted to change colors of the crosswalk people.
Oh, because they were racist.
Because it's racist.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Well, I'm just trying to do my best to keep up with all of this. Let's go to Lloyd in Eagle River, Wisconsin. No. Oh, okay. Oh, forgive me. Sorry. Angela in Elmhurst, Illinois. Good morning, Angela.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was out to dinner on Friday night with some girlfriends, lifelong friends. We were all born and raised Catholic grade school, high school, and long story short, it came up that they're all like pro-life and don't understand why the Catholic Church won't support homophobia and all that business. And I kind of just sat there.
I don't understand that, Angela. Could you rewind and re-say that? Why the Catholic Church won't support homophobia? I'm not sure what that means.
I was with girlfriends and they were saying they don't understand how the Catholic Church won't support gay people. That's just mean. And, you know, these girls are pro-choice. And I just sat there quietly. And then I felt guilty that I didn't defend, you know, my Catholic faith and kind of stand up to them. And I basically didn't know what to say because these are lifelong friends and I didn't want to offend anybody. But obviously, if they're saying they're Catholic, those aren't really the values of the Catholic faith. So,
So let me jump in. So we obviously we want to support everyone by support. See, that word can mean different things under different circumstances. So I want to support everybody in ways that they should be supported. I mean, I don't want anyone to go hungry. I want everyone to have some shelter and medical care. So we can use the word support in that way. But I don't support racism. I don't support the ideology or the activity of somebody marching in the KKK. I don't support Hamas in its attempts to wipe Israel off the map and bomb them to smithereens. I don't support that. I don't want to see the Palestinian people harmed. They need food and water and shelter and safety and security like anyone else. I support that, but I don't support activity. So this is maybe why you might want to say, well, what do you mean support? What are you asking for? Support the activity? And if that's what you're asking for, that's different from the Catholic Church supporting people as people and seeking the best for them. I mean, the Catholic Church supports everybody that way. But what about supporting certain activities that are objectively immoral? And the church has always taught that activity is immoral. So what I'm suggesting, Angela, is you turn the conversation around where you become in charge and you start asking them questions. Ask them to explain what they mean. Ask them to defend this position. Ask them to say, you know, why it is that they consider themselves Catholic, but yet they're rejecting teachings from the Bible itself. And I'm talking about the New Testament here, Jesus himself talking about in the beginning God created them male and female. Now, that doesn't get to the heart of some of their notions, at least not directly. But I would propose that the next time this comes up, rather than you being on the defensive and backpedaling and trying to defend, which you can, but if you're not ready to do that quite yet, just ask them questions and raise these issues and see what they say.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. Well, thank you, Angela. I appreciate that. Very nice to chat with you. We are ready to we're actually overdue to take a break. Thank you, Angela. We'll take a quick break and come right back with more of your phone calls right after this. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We are back, and thank you for listening. Lloyd, I was coming to you, and you hung up. I was coming to you next. Call back, Lloyd, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Mary in New Jersey. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Patrick. Right now, as we speak in China, people who their children have been taken from them, they're Uyghurs, they're in camps. I'm just going to call them concentration camps. They're making clothing that Americans buy, and they're making other things that we all buy and use. And I don't want to sound like...
Are you talking about people in China in labor camps? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, I am. Okay. But I'm connecting it to something that you had been talking about. Just the guys on the train, complaining about the man who had said, ladies and gentlemen. The two people on the train who were upset about that, and every other person who's upset about what could be perceived as, not vitally important things like signs in the IKEA parking lot, and yet there they are buying things that are made by slave labor and using, buying televisions and the clothing that they're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost seems like a diversion, like in the Clockwork Orange, where the language was used to cover up the greater sins that are happening in the world and that we are participating in.
That's true.
I don't know. I mean, I guess the question would be like, is it almost a sin to be, focusing on all these things when we're participating in a more direct way in things which are far, far more evil?
When you say sin, on whose part? On IKEA and the people who want to change the signs, or who?
Like the part of our whole culture focusing on all these things that, and yet how often do you hear about the Uyghurs in the concentration camps? And how often do you hear about, all the people dying from, starvation and everything else? And here we are focusing on what could be perceived as maybe not as important.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Almost like a sin to me. It almost seems like a sin to me.
But I go back to my question: a sin on whose part?
On the part of the people who are giving a guy who's just trying to make his living a hard time, mm-hmm. because he didn't say something properly. And yet, I'll bet you both of the people who said that, and I'm trying to use inclusive language, so both of the people who said that about him on Twitter and who complained, I'll bet you they both were wearing clothes that were made by slave labor in China, and they were holding phones in their hand that were made by slave labor in China.
Yep.
And yet, they're focusing on this poor guy who's probably making minimum wage, and the guy probably got in trouble. I don't know. I just...
Yeah, he probably is in trouble. Well, no, you're correct. I don't disagree with you. In my view, what you're saying is correct. And I have a few conjectures as to why that may be the case. One is that when people, I think this is just human nature, is that when people are engaged in whatever activity that they know deep down inside is wrong, they don't want to admit it. And they don't want to change what they're doing because they like it, they enjoy it, and yet their conscience is bothering them. And that's what the conscience is there for, is to bother you. It's like your nerves in your body, they're there to alert you to pain, to alert you to danger by causing you pain. And that's what your conscience does. It's not all it does, but it's part of what it does. And so if your conscience is bothering you because of your lifestyle choice or whatever it may be, and you don't want to come to terms with that and say, maybe I need to change or do something that I would rather not do, it's easier to latch on to a pseudo moral issue and then make that your crusade, where you are crusading. And I don't like to use the word crusading, because the crusades were actually very good things by and large, but I guess that word will do. That becomes their religious crusade. And they're going to crusade, and they're going to make sure that everybody knows that you can't use gender-specific language, or you have to have signs in parking lots. And that becomes a kind of religious fervor for them as a way to deal with their conscience bothering them on things that really are immoral. You know, there's nothing immoral about having a sign showing a man and a woman with a little child in between. It's neither moral nor immoral. It just is. But they turn it into a moral issue as a way, I think, to assuage their consciences. I think that's part of it. And that's something that we human beings have a tendency to do.
IKEA itself mm-hmm. is having things made in China left and right. I just, my daughter wanted a bed from IKEA. I said, look, it's made in China. Let's go to a thrift shop and get you a bed frame. Mm-hmm. And because I'm trying not to buy stuff made in China ever since I learned all about the Uyghur camp.
I understand.
So IKEA themselves, here they are having things produced probably by slave labor in China, and yet they are, you know.
Well, Mary, I don't know if you thought about this, but if you haven't, let me break it to you gently. You would have to pretty much empty out your house and virtually all of your clothes and your shoes and appliances and things if you really want to be strict about this. You probably would not be able to have anything or buy anything, because so much of what we use every day, what we wear, what we eat, in some way or another comes from China. It's so widespread now that it's virtually impossible to get away from it. You know, and I'm not knocking your position. I share your position, but I don't know how extreme you can go with it, because if you do, you'll be living in a cave making food over an open fire eventually, you know.
Yeah, I think it's worth the effort in the areas in which you can. You can do it with clothing. You can do it. Like, I was trying to find a light for my dining room, and I ended up getting one at a thrift store, and I repainted it.
Yeah.
I know.
I hear you.
I do.
In other words, do what you can. If you can do something, that's good to do. I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, what can you do, Mary? It's the world that we live in. But that's a good reason for us to have this program, don't you think? Because then we can talk about things like this and hopefully raise some consciousness about it.
Yes, I hope so. You did have a caller maybe a few months ago who actually worked, I believe, in the fashion industry, who was talking about it, everything being made in China, and how maybe we could just sort of stop buying so much. I think that's what she said. She lived in Manhattan, and I remember the call clearly, and maybe we don't need everything that we think we need, you know?
That's a good point. I mean, blessed are the poor in spirit, and a kind of poverty where you're not just constantly amassing things. It's not easy to do. Excuse me. It's not easy to do, but it is appealing. Simplifying and cutting down on things. There's something very attractive about that, if you ask me. Well, thank you, Mary. Very nice to talk to you. We're coming back with the next hour, the third hour of our program. Boy, it happened quickly. So please stay right there. All of you holding on the phones, I appreciate your patience, and I am going to come to you as quickly as possible as soon as we come right back, right after this.
Yes, that's true.